City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.
This is Talk to Trisha on City Talk 105.9.
As a child, Stuart Howarth suffered almost unimaginable cruelty at the hands of his stepfather. He was stripped, beaten, raped and locked in a cellar on a daily basis. Now, like many victims of childhood abuse, he kept quiet about what was happening to him. On the one occasion he did try to tell social workers what was going on, they didn't take him seriously and the abuse continued. Well, in 2000, when he was in his 30s, Stuart drove to Wales to confront his estranged stepfather. Now, he'd hoped for some kind of explanation, but the two of them ended up fighting and, overcome with anger, Stuart ended up killing the older man. Well, he then gave himself up to the police and spoke for the first time about what had happened when he was young. And when the case went to court, he got a reduced sentence, but his life didn't get any easier. In jail, he was bullied so badly by one prison officer that when he was released, he successfully prosecuted the man in question. But things were still tough for Stuart. 5 years ago, he was penniless, using drink and drugs and contemplating suicide. Fast forward to today, and he's sober, he's solvent, and he's happy. And he's just written a book telling the story of his remarkable journey. And I'm glad to say he's on the phone now from his home in Manchester. Stuart, welcome to City Talk.
Thank you very much.
It sounds awful, doesn't it? I hate canning, putting somebody's life into a can like that, because you have been through so much. Can I start at probably, I don't know, one of the most difficult parts? Tell me about the day when you killed your stepfather.
It was a culmination of events, really. I felt that after several attempts to speak to doctors and such like, which I always found difficult and always feared exposing what I'd been through as a child for fear of not being believed or going mentally insane, I felt that the only person that could answer the questions was my stepfather.
And so what, you drove to see him?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a decision off the cuff. I was having problems in my relationship with my partner, as I always have done. My whole life was falling to pieces. I had an overriding feeling of being bad and naughty and no good, the things that I was told up until the age of 12. Yeah. And I just felt that my stepfather did such a tremendous grip and hold on me. I was very much afraid of my stepfather, but I still loved him, which a lot of people don't understand.
How old were you when you drove out there to confront him?
32.
And what were you hoping would happen? Because we often run scenes in our head, don't we? I'm going to say this, then they're going to say or do this. What was the scene you ran in your head?
I just wanted to be loved. A lot of people don't understand, and the common misconception is that if somebody hurt them in such a terrible way, they'd want to do them great harm. And it was far from it. The way I was groomed as a child meant that it left me feelings of overriding guilt, shame, something that I'd done wrong. And I attempted to go back to see my stepfather to say, to apologise, really, and ask for his forgiveness. And
really?
Absolutely.
And did you want to ask what it was you'd done wrong, or did you think you knew?
What you've got to remember, that the behaviours inside of me were so entrenched for such a period of time that I just believed everything that he said was right. Everything that he did to me, every act of abuse that was committed, was a result of me being a bad and naughty child. And when you're a child, you don't know to ask other people. And people have often said to me recently, you know, you must have known what was going on was wrong. And the way I explained that was, did your father ever hit you when you was a child? And most people say, yes, it was allowed in those days. I said, did you ever tell anybody? And they said, what for? And I understood the abuse that was taking place as being punishment because it wasn't good enough. And the trip to see my stepfather was a result of depression, anxiety, so much hurt, so much pain, rage, anger, frustration. I just wanted him to forgive me and say that I wasn't a naughty boy and that he was wrong and that he was sorry. And even in my depressed state, to try and make some attempt to resolve things.
And how did it go in reality?
Terrible. I arrived at the time I was running away from everything. I used to escape into drink and recreational drugs at weekend to try and cope with the trauma and stress. I phoned me now wife on a Sunday night. I was expected to go and pick her up from her home, and I drove down the motorway to the house and just had some terrible need to see my stepfather and carried straight on driving, found his house in Wales, arrived at the house. I believe that I'd regressed. When I looked at the house, I looked at the house where we lived as children. I saw that house. I went to what I thought was the back of the property, and there was a dog bowl there, and it reminded me of having to commit acts of abuse as a kid involving the dogs. I travelled to the front of the house. The curtains were closed. It reminded me of watching pornographic films that we were forced to watch as children with the curtains
closed. Everything came flooding back.
Everything, flashbacks. It was terrible.
And when you actually saw your stepfather, what did you say, or how did he react to seeing you there?
I remember looking up at my stepfather saying, "Hiya, Dad." Now, the thing is, I'm 6'3". My stepfather was about 6 foot. There was a step into his house. There was no way I could look up at him. But I swear to God, to this day, I just looked up at him and said,
"Hiya,
Dad."
No, you were still a child. You went back to childhood.
Absolutely.
And what did he say?
He just said, "Who is it?" I said, "It's Stewie." He went, "Come in." He was expecting me. We'd made a phone call.
Right.
And I just remember going into the house and shaking, like, just so nervous. So even now speaking it, it's like a bad nightmare, just reliving it. And I just saw her. I just began to cry. And I just said, "Dad, why did you hurt so when you were kids?" I had a sister in a wheelchair, Shirley, who was spina bifida, who was being abused from 3 or 4 years of age. And I just looked at him, and I just saw her, so kind of melted. It was like going back in at, you know,
little boy again.
Yeah, 7, 8 year old, and just being so sorry. And I was that nervous, I had to sit down. He immediately sat down on the settee, and I had to sit down.
Yeah.
And I was just shaking violently.
And how was he? Did he click?
He didn't understand me, I don't think. He was just, he began to argue with me and shout at me. And
What sort of thing was he denying?
He was denying everything, yeah.
That's the worst, isn't it? Because it makes you think, it compounds that whole thing that you're going mad, you made it up.
I just, I was just apologising and just saying, even my vocabulary, I was saying, "Sorry, Daddy, I'm sorry, I just, you know, it's just," and then I spotted, there was a hammer by the side of him, and I went to grab for the hammer, and all I remember was saying, "No, Daddy, no," and just running from the house, and in that moment, I'd hit him several times with it.
Do you think it was just that moment that everything came to a head?
I was just frightened. I just ran from the house believing he was chasing me, as he often did when he was in a child. I jumped in my car. I made several phone calls to people saying, "I think I've hurt him. I don't know what I've done." I drove back home. My mother had a pub at the time. I drove back home to my mother's pub and said that I'd been to see my stepfather. And they said to me I'd been taking drugs. And I was in shock.
They just couldn't believe what you'd done?
No. It still upsets me today, and it's just like a terrible, terrible nightmare. And my girlfriend at the time, Tracy, who's now my wife, and my sister came, everybody came, and I just said, "I've got to go, I need some space," and I intended to kill myself. And I drove up the M62 motorway, got to a speed of about 120 mile an hour to flip the car, and my phone rang.
Who was that?
It was my wife, and she just said, "Stuart, whatever you've done, whatever's happened, just come home.
Yeah.
We'll get through it." And it, I just managed to drive back to the pub. We phoned the police, and the police said there'd been no news of anything, and that they'd get back to me, which I found was quite strange.
Yeah.
And I went and sat in the my bedroom, just cried. My wife held me.
Was there part of you couldn't really believe what had happened?
I didn't know what had happened, to be honest. It was just all like such a terrible, terrible dream. And I loved him. Tricia, I loved him.
I can understand.
He was my hero. You know, I often say to people, you can kick a dog and you can bully a dog and it'll always come back. And, you know, the only person that ever saw it, he was my hero. No matter what he did to me, he tortured and abused me in such terrible, terrible ways. And he was my hero, I loved him, and I didn't know any better.
And all you wanted is for him to love you
absolutely
back. Let's go back to that. When did your stepfather come into your life, Stuart? How old were you?
I only remember my stepfather being around. When I was younger, I just kind of remember. I've got a very, very good memory, me, and I always remember we grew up in a poverty area of Manchester, running about naked, playing in the dirt outside, digging the dirt with lollipops. We were with lollipop sticks. We were in an area where there were large families, single mothers, everybody neighbouring, and Dad just always seemed to be there. And Mum used to say to me, "He's not the girl's real father, but he's your real dad, and you have to play a game and pretend that he's not your real dad too, because we're going to go to courts, and we don't want the other girls to know that he's not really, you know, that he's your dad and not just theirs."
But he wasn't your dad, really.
No, he wasn't. But I thought he was, Tricia.
Yeah.
I thought that somehow maybe he was, and Mum was trying to protect the girls. But, you know, I've had conversations with my mother since all of this, and she was, you know, people always want to point the finger at my mother. I love my mother to bits. I can't. Yeah. The damage that was done between us, mean I can't hug my mother today. She was never allowed to hold my hand. She was never allowed.
Why not?
Because he would beat her up. He was so possessive and jealous of everything. You know, to the outside world, this was a model man that went out and worked. He worked on as a dustbin man. He was hard working. But behind that door, a bit like domestic violence with women, people just do not know what's going on.
But when's the first time that he crossed that line from being dad to subjecting you to all the sorts of horrors that you describe in your book?
In my mind, when I was about 13, in reality, when I was 3 or 4, when we were on holiday.
Why's the difference?
Sorry?
Why the difference? You said in reality, 3 or 4, but in your mind, 13.
Because when my sisters exposed that they were suffering terrible abuse, my stepfather always said to me that he'd put me in a home, the police would come for me, he'd kill me and the family. When the police arrived to arrest him when I was 11 and a half, nearly 12 years old, I thought he'd come for me. And nobody explained anything to me. I was told to go out and play, and I didn't understand for some time afterwards the true gravity of what had happened to my sisters. All that I knew was that they hadn't been naughty and they'd been punished. I didn't see it as abuse. I saw it as punishment.
I was saying in one part of your book where you actually came in when you were a child and you saw your stepfather lying on top of your sister who had spina bifida.
Yeah.
Did you know what was going on?
Not really. I knew, well, no. I don't know. I try and fight it today. That still causes me great pain when I think of that. Because I still carry a tremendous guilt. My sister's died, you know, and I still carry tremendous guilt. But even though I was a child myself, I maybe could have done more. Maybe I should have known. But that's when we look back as an adult, not as a child.
Exactly. Children are powerless, aren't they? But for you, what do you recall as the abuse starting?
During a trip to Wales, really, he used to take us down to his sisters who lived in North Wales, where he ultimately ended up living. And just me one day running off down at the beach at Prestatyn or at Robin Hood, and I'd got carried away as a child. I was jumping the waves and watching the water trickle backwards, and I must have gone miles away. And the next thing, my stepfather was upon me and just started hurling horrendous abuse at me and forced me face down into the sand. I couldn't breathe. I thought he was going to kill me. And just knowing that I was sorry because I'd been naughty. And
then
hurling loads of verbal abuse at me that, do you want me to tell your mother what horrible little such and such you were? And I just knew I'd been naughty. And as soon as I got back to Mum, I kind of smiled. I just knew I was a naughty child.
How old were you then?
About 3, 4 year old.
Oh, gosh. Let me just tell people, Stuart, you're listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9. I'm talking to Stuart Howarth about the abuse started. Stuart, you said it started with him, you know, telling you you're a naughty boy and being really angry with you.
Yeah.
What did it progress from then? Did it set up a pattern?
Absolutely. The way it first started, my stepfather used to play with me and tickle me and everything. And he'd hurt me. And Mum would be in the kitchen cooking. And I'd start to cry and she'd come in and he'd go, "What's up with you? Well, I'm only playing with you." And she'd say, "Stop it. Don't be so soft." And then what that kind of did, it told me as a child that Mum knew that this was happening. This was okay. It was my fault. Rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
It was my fault. And then that set him up then to be more and more sinister towards me, and just the abuse. He used to hit me with buckle belts, walking sticks. Can I stand up? Can I sit down? Can I go to the toilet, Daddy? Can I have a piece of bread, Daddy? I'd get battered for washing my hands, leaving dirt on the soap, not using the hot tap, not putting a towel correctly, eating the crust of bread. Just million, just everything, terrorised.
How did you deal with that? How did you deal with the pain?
I used to glue sniff. I used to run away, want to be out of the house all the time until I knew the time I had to be back in, and whatever time I came back, it was okay. And then we used to do... It's still quite difficult. I remember at school doing scripture classes and things, and I used to always listen intently to some of the Bible classes and things. I used to pray to Jesus at night to make me a good boy.
What did you pray for?
Just to be good.
Not for him to stop?
No, just to be good, because everything he did was justified. Because I was a bad child, and naughty, bad things happen to naughty people.
Did you know when he was going to rut? Because it's the unpredictability. I know, I was beaten as a child, and it was unpredictability that made you scared all the time.
Mm. Yeah, I was scared, I was terrorised. I used to wee on the bedroom floor, I wouldn't come downstairs to the bathroom, I was that frightened. I used to wee in drawers and on the floor, and if it was something other than to urinate, I used to hold my breath for ages and just stand there, just stepping from one toe to the other, wondering whether it was safe to go down the stairs, because we lived in I lived in an attic room, in a kind of three-story house, and just the fear that overcame me. And my stepfather, I always knew when there was a particular bad time coming, because his lip used to curl up.
Mm.
He used to have this look in his face, and I just knew.
So that meant you were always searching his face?
Always.
And when did the sexual abuse start, Stuart?
Probably about 6-year-old. I'd been out playing. It was over a period of time. He used to inspect me when I come in to make sure I'd been washing myself properly and going to the toilet and cleaning myself up properly afterwards. There would then become a pattern of behaviour where I'd come in, I'd be beaten. Sometimes we used to have a hatch in the floor in the house, and he'd put me down there. He'd say the rats would get me. I used to try and up the wall for a little bit of comfort, and because it was damp in the cellar, the plaster used to flake away, and that used to make me cry more, because as a child I thought, even the wall knows you're a naughty boy, even the wall doesn't want to touch you. Then I'd be sent upstairs to bed, usually beaten, sent upstairs to bed. He'd then come up afterwards, and it progressed from there, really. It progressed initially with hugs and loving, and you know you're a naughty boy, and I've got to do these things to you, and progressed on then to sexual acts, and ultimately into buggery. But I also believe, looking back today, my stepfather was becoming so violent, I think if he hadn't been removed from the family home, he would have killed me.
Really?
I really believe that, yeah.
Did your mother not know at all?
When, at first, you see, he was, the way I believe he met my mother, he used to work as a bin man for the local council, he used to come in and sweep the garden. He was aware she had a couple of young children, give us sweets, and he was a knight in charming armour. And slowly, over a period of time, his pattern of behaviour deteriorated, and he said, I'm not looking after your kids, you need to look after your kids, you better get out. He called her all sorts of terrible names, and would beat her and hurt her, and we used to, even at night sometimes, we used to hear her whimpering. And he forced her to go out to work nights. But you know, again, it's so easy for people who haven't walked your path or been in your shoes to point the finger at Mum. And she didn't know. Mum didn't know. She, you know, it's just this sort of clever.
Do you think he groomed her as much?
Absolutely.
As
Absolutely. Tricia, let's look at it this way. She had a first child at 16. She travelled across from Ireland. She had a first child at 16 to a man that was nearly 20 years her senior, 20, 25 years a senior.
Yeah.
She first child had was born with spina bifida. Medical treatment wasn't...
No, then there was nothing, was it?
It wasn't the same then. She then quickly gave birth to my sister, you know, 12 months later, and then I come along another 12. So by the age of 19, she had 3 young children. She was travelling backwards and forwards to hospital.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mother was quite ill the 2 weeks ago. I sat and... I held her hand for the first time. She suffered from an aneurysm.
Oh, geez.
And I was quite frightened. And you know, sitting by that bed holding my mum's hand, wondering whether or not she was going to make it, was... I just realised, I had a realisation for the first time in my life that, you know what, we've suffered. She's endured it all, in addition to her own life. And I know she carries the guilt of what happened to her children.
Do you? Has she ever spoken about it?
Well, it's just so difficult. What abuse does, it creates a barrier. I can't hug my mum because it feels dirty and wrong. I want to hug her and tell her that I love her. You know, it's just fractured the whole family. Completely fractured the whole family. And,
You said that you got into glue sniffing first, and did it progress from there?
I got into glue sniffing, and then there were so many patterns of addictive behaviour. I was searching for love in anywhere I could find it, sports, school teachers. I just wanted to be noticed. It was interesting because 2 years ago I did a talk show on another programme, and... this guy phoned up and said, you know, I'm a sports teacher, I'd know if a child were being abused. And I said, why is that? And he said, because you'd be, you know, they'd be very quiet. I said, I was completely opposite. I wanted to be loved. I outperformed at whatever I did. And just people just don't, they don't understand. And that's the whole purpose behind the books.
No, I think the understanding is if you want to be loved, if you want to be accepted, if you're told you're never any good at anything...
Yep.
At home, outside the home, you will go a million miles to prove it different.
Absolutely. And I picked a whole pattern of addictive behaviours up. Even with my relationships, I was always insecure, I was always intense, I was always frightened of being left. I began binge drinking at weekends, I took ecstasy, I took cocaine. For a period of time, it took me to a level where I found peace and freedom.
Did you have any other obsessions, Stuart?
Bodybuilding.
I went steroids?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But any other ones, like touching things, or if I do this, because you talked about praying to Jesus. I'm thinking of, I had to get to the next street corner before the next car.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just all the patterns. I think it left me with an addictive personality. A workaholic. Everything I did to excess. No safe boundaries.
No.
All I heard in my head all the time was, you're bad, you're naughty, and you're no good.
Did anybody ever say anything nice to you?
I couldn't accept nice things. Still struggle at times now with nice things. You know, I do quite a lot of support work myself today, and one of the things that we do to check for depression is we have a card, and we ask people to read a full card full of negative comments, and they rattle through it.
Yeah.
And then we say, please turn the card over. And it says things like, I am worthy, I am lovable. You know, even just saying those things now, it puts out feelings in me.
I can hear that. When you gave yourself up to the police after killing your stepfather, and you actually told them about all of this, you'd never dared before, and and you said before when the police came, you thought they were coming for you.
Yeah.
How did that feel?
I didn't tell the police, Tricia. I had a solicitor that was there and said to me, Stuart, it's very important you don't say anything. I said, I'm going to tell them everything. He said, Stuart, you've got to listen to me. You have not got to say anything. And I found that so difficult. They asked me so many questions, and I found that so difficult. And the police consequently charged me with murder. And I was sent to prison. Then the defence team came along and they said to me, right, you're going to be interviewed off four or five of the country's top psychiatrists. You've got to tell them everything. And all the psychiatrists that came to see me with men, and I was frightened of men. I didn't just get abused off my stepfather, I got abused off three other men. And
what, friends of your stepfather's?
Is what, sorry?
Friends of your stepfather's?
Well, one of them was a friend of my stepfather's. I mean, that's another story. He was consequently found innocent of any wrongdoing, which is another story in itself.
But men were scary. They were
very much so. I thought, well, listen, growing up at school, my stepfather used to show me images of pornography. And when I was going up at school, other boys would come along with pornographic magazines, and I thought they were like my stepfather. They used to talk about girls and the things that they'd done, all part of natural growing up. But I hated most men until I was about 21 years old. I thought they were all paedophiles.
So when did you ever learn to feel safe anywhere, Stuart? Or have you?
A day at a time. It's something you learn. I discussed this with a survivors group a couple of weeks ago. You know, there'll always be a part of me that will remain broken forever. What we have to do is to learn to accept. We don't necessarily have to forgive, but what we'd have to do is learn to accept what has been and try and make the best we can a day at a time.
And how old are you now?
I'm now 40.
Do you think of it ever as your father having power over you, your stepfather having power over you? And do you ever wonder about the day when he won't, when you won't allow him to have that power?
Absolutely. I often portray that myself. What I say to people is every time we're sad, lonely, down, depressed, suicidal, addictive patterns of behaviour, the abuser's still winning. What I understand today, we have the power of choice. And it's only through the very hard work that I've done, I've looked at myself, I've looked at my character defects, I've looked at who I am as a person, I've looked at everything about myself.
Now hang on, I'm going to stop you there, because you said your character defects.
Yeah.
But surely the one thing that you have is that you survived. You, however you got through, however messed up it was, however much the drink, the drugs, the steroids, the suicide attempt, you made it through.
Yeah.
That is an incredible gift of survival and resilience.
I don't see that, Tricia. I don't know.
Do you see it as luck?
I don't know. I mean, today, all I do, you see, in a strange, perverse kind of way, my past has become my greatest asset. Because of what I've been through, we've achieved so much. Last year we won New Business of the Year, we won Entrepreneur of the Year. I left prison in 19th of September 2001, homeless with 84 pence in my pocket.
Yeah.
And where I am today in 8 years is just not possible. It's just a miracle. It's through hard work, dedication, the love of my beautiful wife, who I wouldn't be here with today without. And
there's got to be something in you that attracts such a beautiful woman, isn't there?
Well, I don't know. I just love her to the core. She's my best friend, and I do, you know. I always said that recovery for me, it was an inside job. You see, I used to need my wife to make me better, and whenever we were down and sad and I'd taken drugs or I was, my nightmares, my flashbacks, I just used to want her to hold me and never let me go. I wanted her to hug me forever and just to love me forever and never ever let me go. And I know today that no one can save you, you've got to do it yourself. And today I want to share my life with her rather than needing her.
Oh, that's a big difference, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Let me just remind people, I'm talking to Stuart Howarth about his extraordinary resilience and journey and how he's used his brutal childhood to help other victims of abuse. And you've touched upon that, Stuart. I should tell people the National Association for People Abused in Childhood, NAPAC. I just want to give out the support line number. It's 0800 085 3330, open Monday to Friday. Free if you call from an Orange, Virgin, O2, Vodafone and T-Mobile phone. That's 0800 085 3330. I wanted to give that out, Stuart, because I'm thinking you talking will trigger a lot in many listeners. Who was the person, do you think, that first showed you there was another way to be?
Many people, really. Some of the relationships I've been involved with, they haven't done anything wrong. I was damaged goods. But, you know, I tried so many ways. And even at the hospitals, you know, when I'd cut myself or I'd took an overdose, they kind of frowned upon me. You know, instead of thinking, hang on, here's a guy, 6'3", 20 stone, he's cutting himself or he's trying to kill himself, there must be something wrong. I didn't get that. What I got was, we're here to save lives.
Yeah, patch you up and throw you out again.
Yeah, and then it left me with this feeling of bad, naughty, no good. It was this prophecy again that was just
all
a vicious circle.
How do you feel? Because I went into my bookshop the other day and I saw a whole load of your books up there on the shelf, and I thought, oh, I'm going to be talking to this guy. How do you feel when you go knowing that everybody knows?
Well, you know, you asked me earlier, you said, you know, I had to speak to all the psychiatrists and psychologists. And when I first met with them, my legal team said I was getting angry when I was speaking to my psychiatrists and psychologists. And I started to cry. And I said, I can't tell them. It hurts me. It angers me so much. It just hurts so much. And they said, you've got to find a way. And they said, you're an intelligent guy. Try and write it down. It'll be cathartic for you. So the book was never a book. I wrote it down to try and help me with those sessions that I had with psychiatrists, because all they were doing was investigating the crime. They wasn't giving me any help, any support, nothing. They just wanted to know the facts of the case. And when the psychiatrist left me, I was more traumatised during prison than I was before I went in. But I had a mountain of paperwork that I'd written, which ultimately became the book.
Stuart, thank you. Seems an inadequate way of saying things. I see it as very precious that you've chosen to be so honest. And I do think you are amazing as far as resilience and survival goes. And you're perhaps a lesson to anybody else who's been through hell that you can make it.
Yeah.
I'll give you the compliment even if you can't give it to yourself.
I think more than anything, Tricia, I know what it's like to be in pain. You know, we had baby P, we had the little girl in Haringey. I remember being in prison when the little girl in Haringey suffered terrible abuse. And I was listening to some of the so-called specialists talking and saying, why didn't you tell anybody? And I was on B Wing in Strange Ways Prison in Manchester, and the whole wing heard me because I screamed at the TV and I said, because she didn't know. She just didn't know.
Yeah. We all think what our parents do to us is normal.
Yeah.
Stuart, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For talking to me. And I'm going to give people a little bit more information, because I'm sure your openness has helped a lot of people decide that maybe they need to tell somebody somewhere.
Yeah. Tricia, as well, just before you finish, I want to say a special thank you to all the people who stand by the people who've suffered abuse. And all the people that are going through such terrible ordeals in life, because these are really the unsung heroes, who without, there'd be no future for any of us.
And you're one of those people.
Well, no, maybe. beyond it all, you've touched on a lot of things during the show, and I want to get across to people. I'm happy today. I've got a good quality of life today, but we can't discuss the areas of my life without feelings, because, you know, the pain's still there.
And I think it's more honest. If you discuss those parts of your life, and I've interviewed people where they rattle through everything without any emotion, and you know they haven't connected.
Yeah.
So I guess your healing is happening as you speak. But I do thank you for your time. I really do. And I wish you peace. And I wish you continued resilience. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Stuart. I've got to say that's probably one of, if not the most moving interview I've done in my career, which is some 25 years. Let me give you that information again in case what he had to talk about has affected you. The National Association for People Abused in Childhood, it's NAPAC, they have a support line, 0800 085 3330, 0800 085 3330, open from Monday to Friday. It is free if you call from an Orange, a Virgin, an O2, a Vodafone and a T-Mobile phone. And also there's Cheshire and Merseyside Rape and Sexual Abuse Support Centre, P.O. Box 35, Warrington, WA1 1DW. There's a helpline. The Warrington helpline is 01925 24 54 44. That's 01925 25 54 44. There's a St Helens helpline as well. That's 01925 22 15 46. 01925 22 1546. And if you want to read the book, and I do recommend it to you, it opens your eyes. It gives you, as Stuart said, some insight behind many of the child cruelty cases that you read. The book by Stuart Howarth is I Just Wanted to Be Loved. It's a story of a boy eager to please the man who destroyed his childhood and the love that overcame it. I would have added resilience there. The other number that I want to give you is two. If you just don't feel you can go to those helplines, if what we've been talking about has stirred up stuff in you and you think, oh God, how the hell do I deal with this? Don't go to bed tonight without ringing the Samaritans. That's the other line you can call. That's 08457 90 90 90. That's 08457 90 90 90. You're listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Listen and log on to the voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.